You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.
You're listening to the smooth night sounds of the Liberty Cats. You Hep Cats and Swing Kittens, pull up your beanbag, put on your beret, grab that electric pipe, put on that smoking jacket, and put your cat in your lap, because it's time for your daily injection of furry love. Now here's the granddaddies of hip and everything cool, Brian Hagen and Taryn P. Lupo.
Meow, and I'm not declawed, dear friends. My name is Brian Hagen, along with...
Taryn P. Lupo, and he will not leave the back of the chair alone.
No.
It's all scratched up. It's a mess.
And I like to get up on the counters at night, too, and crawl around and spray my spray up there because I am not neutered. I like to just spray that so the entire house is smelling like me.
I had a girlfriend in college that whenever she would stay over or whatever, hang out with me, the cat would get jealous she had, and it would pee in the toaster.
In the toaster?
It would hit her appliances.
That's...
So, like, you wouldn't find that out until you heated up that toaster, and you're like, oh!
Cat
so,
pee
yeah,
toast.
Cats can be jerks, FYI.
Wow, yes, they can, and so can we, and that's why we are the Liberty Cats. On this Wednesday edition on Daily Paul Radio, so good to be back once again. We have not yet been booted, despite yesterday's show, talking about everything from hating the FBI to how much fun Pee Wee Herman and Rodney Dangerfield are. And it's going to be another show like that today. We've got a lot to talk about in the world of libertarian entertainment and libertarian movies. And I want to preface this by saying we are going to shortly have a very special guest joining us. Taryn, tell us. Who is coming on the show? This is huge.
I'm very excited about this. It is J. Neil Shulman. He, for you cool cats that are young and maybe not know it, he was one of the very first libertarian fiction authors. I mean, besides like Ayn Rand or whatever. His first book, you probably heard of it, called Alongside Night, came out in 1979. And it was one of the very first books to really hammer an underground economy, like, and I believe it talks about agorism way before anyone ever really talked about it. So I'm real excited to have him come on today. But before we get into his stuff, you know, Brian, one of the things I think that are the most important things we can do to promote liberty is to make liberty cool.
Oh, I agree. Yes.
You have to make it so... statist ideas and turning to the government to solve every problem you've ever had becomes uncool. Like, social pressures are what change things. And I think that the idea of you going to pass a law to tell your neighbor what to do, or you trying to control somebody, is uncool, man. It's not the cool way to act. And as this attitude changes, the ones who will lead us are the artists. And that's why I really push for more libertarian authors, more libertarian books. I want you to turn on the TV and every other show you watch has some sort of libertarian message in it.
You know,
and eventually we're going to get there. It's getting better and better.
You're right. It's exciting when you do have that little opportunity to suddenly see this libertarian theme popping up in pop culture. Especially, you know, I think where we really saw it, and some people disagree with me, Taryn, I don't know if you've even seen the movies, but The Hunger Game. First the books, and then the movies. There are so many ideas of liberty buried within there. And to know that the youth are just picking those books up by the millions, to know that the youth is flocking to the movies and seeing these films, it excited me. In fact, when I saw the first Hunger Games movie, I actually cried. I actually shed a tear because I'm going, this author understands it. This director understands it. They're actually embedding the ideas of liberty kind of in a reverse way. The things that we need to be scared of happening, the things we need to fight against, they're putting it on the big screen for all the world to see.
And I think that's really interesting that the largest movement in young adult literature is dystopian literature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I write dystopian myself. I have a book called One Nation Under Blood that's very dystopian. And for you guys that don't know what that word means, it means you know what a utopia is, like where everything's happy and good. Dystopian means you live in a screwed up environment where everything's dysfunctional.
Yeah.
It's dystopian. So those are like your 1984 books or big government gone crazy books, those sort of thing. But it's really interesting that it is now such a hot genre for young adults, which I think is awesome because it's going to get a message into them young. Do not trust government. Trust yourself and your friends and your individuals. You know, don't look to mommy government to save you for everything. And I'm frankly surprised that that message is out there. I'm seeing a big push, though, and things changing that every year it seems like there are more TV shows that have more libertarian writers or something. Because I'm picking up shows that are coming on talking about Bitcoin on TV. You know,
yes.
there was a Bitcoin joke on The Simpsons, and I was like, what? You know, I couldn't believe it. So I think we're going the right direction. All we need is a heck of a lot more entertainers. And J. Neil Shalman was one of the very first, man. He's old school that, you know, he blazed the trail for guys like me.
And, you know, it's kind of cool, I think, that so much of liberty thought and liberty thinking has been found more in the world of science fiction. I mean, haven't you seen that, Taryn? You look at an author like Robert Heinlein. He was so libertarian in his thinking. You have Philip K. Dick, who wasn't necessarily a libertarian, but by gosh, was he into civil liberties. I mean, you look at a book like Minority Report or a book like Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which later became Blade Runner in 82, starring Harrison Ford, completely screwed up from the original plot line. Even The Running Man with Schwarzenegger and the other one was Schwarzenegger about the same time period, which was originally called We'll Remember It For You Wholesale. These all had strong themes of our civil liberties being eroded, and you just don't – I don't know. There's been many, many years between a writer like Philip K. Dick and Robert Heinlein, who are good friends, to today when you have, like, the Hunger Games. There was this huge time period where you just were not seeing that liberty theme in any sort of writing, I think.
I think you're right. It went unpopular for a while in the 80s and 90s, and now it's back. Now, you could always find it in sci-fi. It would hide out, but you wouldn't see it much in anything else. And you sure as heck never saw it on TV. I mean, every cop drama that came on, the cops were always the good guys that saved everyone. And now you have shows where, you know, the cops are definitely not the good guys. that's the rarity where there's one or two good cops. So I think it's getting more realistic. But I do want, before we run out of time, I do want to talk about Mr. Shulman's movies he had recently done. He's done two in the past couple of years that I liked a lot. Lady Magdalene, which stars Nichelle Nichols, which is Uhura from Star Trek. And she is basically a madam at a brothel. And there's even some musical numbers where she sings. So, Brian, could you play a clip of that, trailer for that?
Here we go.
During World War II, Hollywood gave us conventional movies and conventional heroes. This movie doesn't. Federal agent Jack Goldwater has been demoted.
You're not actually a federal air marshal, are you?
My tactical assessment was based on a confluence of factors.
And reassigned.
Where are you sending me?
Because I haven't paid my back taxes, you're here acting as the brothel's owner.
Well,
so much for you to gain.
No pain!
In here at Lady Magdalene's.
There's gonna be a man running this place, staying in our house, living in one of our bedrooms?
Hey, I work for the IRS. Who doesn't trust the IRS?
The last meal agent from the IRS.
That really looks like a great movie, Taryn.
Yeah, it's pretty tongue-in-cheek. I mean, there's a lot of jokes against the IRS. And you know what actually I really liked was Uhura can really sing, man. She does a great job at singing. I didn't know.
I was enjoying just a little bit I got to hear of her singing right there.
Do we have enough time to show the other clip of his current movie he's coming on to talk to us about, Alongside Night?
Absolutely. Alongside Night. It's his new film. And here, we're going to play just a little clip of this, too, before we have to hit the break.
Today is the day that I've been warning everyone about most of my career.
My fellow Americans, let me assure you that we are not witnessing self-destruction of the capitalist system.
Governments everywhere tell people what they need. The people already know what they need.
Tolerating dissent is a luxury they can no longer afford.
You're being shipped out to auxiliary tonight.
Wow.
He's brilliant, Jack.
Barely 16.
Joan of Arc was leading armies into battle.
That looks compelling, Karen.
Yeah, and it really is well filmed. I mean, I'm a amateur filmmaker. You know, I'm making a documentary and stuff, and just seeing the amount of shots he has is impressive with that. So I'm excited to get him on here to talk, and hopefully he will in a little bit, and we'll ask him about his cats and all the hard-hitting stuff.
Of course. You know, it's funny you mentioned being an amateur filmmaker. I'm an amateur filmmaker myself, but we can't discuss that on the show.
Well, I don't think it counts if everything you've ever made is on a cell phone in a bedroom.
By yourself. You're exactly right. Well, no, some people would call that a one-man show.
Well, I mean, figured you shared it with some ladies if they liked it or not.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an acquired taste. Why let them say no? You just got to send it and see what they think about it.
And that's right, ladies. Feel free to text him so you can see Brian's amateur films. He'll send them to you.
That's exactly right. Hey, J. Neil Schulman coming up next on the Liberty Cats, so don't go anywhere on this Wednesday edition of the show. Brian Hagan, Taryn Lupo taking care of things. Crunching up the old catnip.
In a world where freedom is fun and everything you thought you knew is wrong, two unlikely voices rose up from the noise. From the minds that brought you Fajita Fun Time and Wheels Off Liberty comes the Liberty Cats. Darren P. Lupo and Brian Hagan are just in time to save us all.
Well, that's exactly right. We are here to save the world. That's what your Liberty Cats do every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on Daily Paul Radio. So good to have you here with us again, dear friends. And as we were talking up front, we are so proud and pleased to have a very special guest with us on today's edition of the show. Isn't that right, Taryn P. Lupo?
Yeah, we were leading in that I was real excited. The topic was libertarian entertainment and ideas of liberty actually getting into TV and movies and books now, and we're seeing more and more of it. But one of my favorites is J. Neil Schulman, and we were talking about him earlier. If you're just tuning in now, I'm not sure if that was your first book alongside Night, but it was 1979 is when he got started.
That was in fact my first novel, 1979.
Yeah, so you've been in it a long time, and I kind of want to start there, Jay. Is what was it like in the 70s and 80s writing liberty ideas in fiction? How receptive were people to it back then, and did they have any clue? Have they ever even seen it before?
Well, I think we had some very excellent predecessors in Ayn Rand and Robert A. Heinlein. And coming into libertarian science fiction at that time, they were the giants as far as I was concerned. And I was only hoping that anything I did would do a smidgen of what they had accomplished.
Yeah, I think most people, that's their entry point is Ayn Rand. But your work kind of took more of a black market, what they call today agorism. And I think it was the very first time I had really heard of that idea was in your books. And it has been a long time to move it, because you've written, gosh, a lot of books, if I know right. And how many books do you have now, Jay?
I'm not sure exactly how to count them, because sometimes for example, my latest book, The Heartmost Desire, is made up of two books, which I had already previously serialized on J. Neil Schulman, Irrational Review. So I think if you count it up, it's somewhere around a dozen books.
Yeah, okay. And that's, I'm an author myself, and a dozen books seems like a lifetime of work. You know, it's quite impressive to have that many books. And then the idea that you decided to start making films, give us a little history how you transitioned from books to films, because I'm in that position right now. I'm making my first documentary. I'm trying to learn as I go, and you've already been through it. Give me some advice.
Well, to start off with, I was interested in film right from the beginning. Alongside Night was published as a novel in 1979, but looking back through my archives, I discovered that I had written a draft of the screenplay for Alongside Night a year before it was published in 1978. So I was seeing Alongside Night as a movie even when I was writing it as a novel. I suppose the first time I actually broke in as having written a screenplay for anything that anybody got to see was in 1986, when an episode I wrote of CBS's revived Twilight Zone, an episode which I wrote called Profile in Silver, about a future historian who goes back and stops the JFK assassination, was broadcast on CBS. And, you know, that it being CBS, it being the Twilight Zone, it was sort of addicting. I got to actually travel out to the shooting set and spend the shoot there with the actors and the director, and it was basically like, you know, an addicting shot which I was never going to get over. So I was always interested and pursuing additional screen projects, as well as the books I was writing, both novels, and I was writing short stories, and I was writing nonfiction books as well. But when I got the opportunity, I wrote a script and produced it and directed it as an independent feature film. That was Lady Magdalene's, starring Nichelle Nichols, the original Lieutenant Uhura from Star Trek, the original series. And it was sort of a suspense comedy taking place in a Nevada brothel, which an IRS agent takes over for non-payment of taxes, and while he's there, discovers a domestic Al-Qaeda plot centered around the brothel. So it was, you know, a very heady mixture of libertarian politics and comedy. And yes, because we got Nichelle to sing an original song I wrote in the movie as well.
Well, and she sounds...
We played a clip of that.
Yeah, and she just sounds amazing. Her vocal prowessness, very impressive on her part, too.
Well, people usually aren't aware that she started out as a singer and as a choreographer for Duke Ellington, and toured as a singer for Duke Ellington.
Wow!
Long before she ever entered the final frontier. In fact, when she went, she had to be forced by her agent to go out and audition for Star Trek, because she was, you know, being hailed as the next Josephine Baker when she performed in Paris. So she was an accomplished singer, and by the way, in her heyday, she had a singing range of something like 6 octaves, which is just totally unheard of.
That is incredible. That movie looks fantastic. The new movie alongside Night looking wonderful, too. I think it's fabulous the way you pack in some of these big names that are, you know, are really household names to many of us. And I really want to get into talking about Alongside Night momentarily. Janiel Shulman is our guest today on the Liberty Cats on this Wednesday edition. But before we really get into the nitty-gritty of the movie, I want to ask you, you've been in this movement for, you know, a number of years. Of course, some would say that you truly are one of the first to use the term agorism. Looking back on the foundations of where you started out to today, how have you watched libertarian philosophy evolve, and do you like where it has gone?
Well, to start out with, I think the first libertarian influence on me was Robert A. Heinlein. Even before what is usually considered his libertarian masterpiece, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
I love that book. One of my favorites.
Which
yes.
Came out, I believe, first in 1966, if I'm getting my dates right. Mm-hmm. But even before that, I was reading Heinlein's young adult novels, and then I started reading everything of Heinlein that I could get my hands on. And one of the things that I read of Heinlein was a story, Coventry, which took place, it was published in the same volume as a very early novel of his called If This Goes On, which is about an underground revolution in the United States against a prophet, the prophet incarnate, Reverend Nehemiah Scudder, which is sort of like, you know, a Christian fundamentalist dictatorship, you know, which is somewhere around the level of the Spanish Inquisition, maybe mm-hmm. worse. And so these stories are pretty much what set the tone for me to be a libertarian, although there were strong libertarian themes through most of Heinlein's writing, even going back to when he was sort of a socialist with Upton Sinclair's EPIC movement in California. I've read Heinlein's novel For Us the Living, which was written before any of that, And the word libertarian is used there, and even as a quasi-socialist, Heinlein was for individual liberty and personal liberty in a very strong way. So that was the earliest influence on me. Then I moved to New York in 1970, and in January 1971, my mother was doing, as she did every Sunday, the New York Times Sunday crossword puzzle, which was published in the magazine section. And she said, "Hey, your favorite author's picture is in the magazine section." And it was an article called "New Right Credo Libertarianism? Question mark," by Stan Laer and Louis Rossetto Jr. Louis Rossetto Jr. is the same guy who later went on to found Wired magazine. And this article by these two, I guess, self-outcasts from the Young Americans for Freedom, was talking about the libertarian movement that had coalesced around people like Murray Rothbard and Carl Hess, and Heinlein, and Ayn Rand, and had pretty well coalesced into a separate movement from the more libertarian wing of the conservative movement, as represented by Young American Freedom. And Sam Konkin was one of those libertarians.
J. Neil Shulman, hold that thought, and we'll continue this conversation. It's very fascinating. Now, looking back at the history of the Liberty Movement in a lot of ways, as J. Neil Shulman is our very special guest on this Wednesday edition of the Liberty Cast, April 9th. I'm Brian Hagan, along with Taryn Lupo, and we'll continue to gain this insight coming up next.
This is Taryn Lupo from Liberty Cats. I've been buying gold and silver for over 20 years. I've made some good buys and I've made some poor buys. Most of the time, the prices and markups were too high from the companies I found. Other times, I was tricked into buying fake gold and silver. There's a large learning curve to becoming a good buyer when you're trying to figure it out all on your own. The good news is I finally found someone I trust who is affordable and private. For the last few years, I've only purchased my precious metals from Roberts & Roberts. They make it easy, fast, and discreet. Everything I've ever purchased has been excellent quality at an excellent price. I publicly vouch for the folks at Roberts & Roberts that they'll give you a square deal. Right now, prices on silver are ridiculously low, and it's a great time to buy. Check out Roberts & Roberts.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Grand Wizards of Funk, the Liberty Cats. These hip caps know how to drop such a furry and fantastic rhythm, you'll be solid all night long. You jive hustlers, go get your boots on, flip your grip, and be swelling it to each other. Now, here's the bucket from Nantucket, Brian Hagan, and Lothario from Ontario, Taryn P. Lupo.
That's exactly right. Your Liberty Cats on the air on this Wednesday, April 9th edition of the show. Always so good to be here, dear friends. Good to have you along. And speaking about greatness, we have a very huge name talking to us tonight. His name is J. Neil Shulman. Many of you know him. He's an author. He's a director. He's a brilliant, brilliant mind. Some say one of the first to really solidify that concept of agorism that so many talk about in the Liberty Movement to this day. And J. Neil Shulman, before we took the break, you were kind of explaining to us how we arrived at this concept of agorism. Please continue that. I was finding that to be a fascinating ride.
Well, in essence, I started college in the fall of 1971, started my own libertarian group on campus, not knowing a single other libertarian on earth, wrote to the Society for Individual Liberty in Philadelphia. They sent me back a meeting that was taking place in New York, which I went to. And there I met Samuel Edward Konkin III, who was at that time a grad student at New York University. We met up with each other, found out that we had science fiction in common, among other things. And in essence, I started writing for his magazine, as well as collating, folding, and stapling it, which is what you had to do in those days if you were a libertarian. You just didn't write for a magazine. You actually had to put it together and mail it out. and we started hanging out together. And over the next few years, Sam started looking for an alternative to the political approach, the Libertarian Party approach at that time, to getting a libertarian future going, and that turned out to be counter-economics and agorism. And so when I started writing alongside Knight, I incorporated agorism and counter-economics into the plot of Alongside Knight before Sam actually got around to writing it in nonfiction in the New Libertarian Manifesto. So you're right. The first appearance of agorism is in the novel Alongside Knight. And then after that, Sam got around to writing the manifesto to talk about in actual theoretical terms.
Yeah, that is just amazing to me. Talking to J. Neil Shulman with Alongside Knight, the new film, and Brian Hagin along with Taryn Lupo. And I know, Taryn, you had a number of ideas for our special guest tonight, especially you wanted to talk to him about all things cats.
Yeah, we wanted to because I had asked him, you know, you can't come on without at least talking about a cat. And he said he didn't own one at the moment, but he did have cats. So what's up? Are you pro-cat or not?
Well, yes. In the long term, pro-cat, grew up with cats. However,
is there any in the movie? That's what I want to know.
We have some cool cats in the movies, but none of them are felines.
Well, you know, J. Neil always wears a beret now when I see him, so I always think, you know, he definitely could be on this show, because we talk about wearing a beret.
Yes, and leather jackets.
Yes. And you've had a beard at least since the 70s. I mean, straight up, that beard has to be, what, 30 years old now, right?
I don't know if it goes back that quite far, but, you know, after I started putting on weight, a beard is just an excellent way to cover up that old double chin.
Oh, okay. Because I'm in the process of growing a beard, and Brian has a beard. We're both beard guys. And so
yeah, when I was young and thin, my beard was pretty scrawny.
And then as you get larger, I know that feeling. I trust you, me. I know exactly how that works. And yeah, my third chin is hidden so well underneath this beard. I hate to give away the secret. You know what I want to ask you is, you know, we were talking about your work in the film world, and specifically with the new film Alongside Knight. How did you connect with some of these names? Like, how did you really get involved inside Hollywood to get someone like, say, Kevin Sorbo to star in such a strongly libertarian film?
That starts in the first class cabin of a flight from Los Angeles to Atlanta, Georgia, which I was making with Nichelle Nichols to go to the Dragon Con convention, which we were going to screen the movie we just made together, Lady Magdalene's. And in that first class cabin was Erin Gray, who had played on the Buck Rogers TV series, and Lou Ferrigno, who was on the TV series The Hulk, and Kevin Sorbo from Hercules' Legendary Journeys and Andromeda. So I'm sitting next to Nichelle in the first class cabin. She and Erin Gray are old friends and go off to talk to each other. And Kevin sat down next to me, and we started talking. And within a couple of minutes, we found out that we were both fans of the American Revolution and free market economics and the right to keep and bear arms. And, you know, we found out essentially that we were politically simpatico. Huh. And so it wasn't too long after the Dragon Con convention, I got Kevin's contact information. I sent him the script. He took a few months to read it and get back to me and said, yeah, I'll play Dr. Vreeland.
Well, what was that like?
That's cool because...
Yeah, for you to have
him... Brian.
Oh, that's okay, Taryn. For him to say yes, that must have been pretty thrilling, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, it put us on the map. It gave me a star to be able to sell the movie, and it took a couple of years after that to be able to come up with the money to make it. But it was one of the reasons that when I finally got to sit down with Patrick A. Heller of Liberty Coin Service to talk about his financing the movie, and I discovered at that meeting that Pat Heller had been a fan of Alongside Knight since it had come out in hardcover in 1979. Hmm. So it made it a lot easier discussion, for the prospect of him actually getting a dime of his money back at some point, to tell him that we had a star, and having Kevin as a star got us other name actors as well. It was the reason. First of all, I was able to attract Sam's wife, who played Serena the Golden Hind on Hercules' Legendary Journeys, and then they got married, And so Sam Sorbo, Kevin's real-life wife, plays Dr. Vreeland's wife in the movie, Catherine Vreeland, the mother of my teenage star, Elliot Vreeland, you know, played by Christian Kramer. And so, you know, already it was a family affair. And then we got a couple of more Star Trek actors, Tim Russ and Garrett Wong from Star Trek Voyager, Tuvok and Henson Kim, respectively. Got Gary Graham, Detective Sykes, on the TV series Alien Nation and TV movies after that. And then while we were in production, we were able to attract Jake Busey, who plays President Charles Crane. That's an interesting name, you know, Charles and Crane put together. Anyway, he plays President Charles Crane. Jake Busey, of course, from Heinlein's Starship Troopers, and also from the movie Contact. So, you know, additionally, I was able to get Saeed Faraj, who had played opposite Matt Damon in Green Zone, to come back. He had been in Lady Magdalene's, so I gave him a part. And then, you know, we went on from there. Valence Thomas, a New York actor who had been in Men in Black 3, he came on as one of our characters as well. And Mara Marini, who had been in Lady Magdalene's, came back to Alongside Night. And since then, she'd appeared a few times in an interesting role. Brandy Max on the TV series Parks and Recreation. She says, "I'm not a porn star, I just play one on TV."
I'll tell you what, that is some great Hollywood bona fides you've got with the film. And well, I can just feel Taron Lupo over there all agape and drooling and his eyes wide, because you're just jealous, aren't you, Taron?
Well, I've met a couple of these people. You know, I've met Erin Gray and talked with her some. And then Tim Roos and I had Tim Russ had a real long conversation about his film. I don't know if you knew he did a Star Trek of Gods and Men, which had
because one of our producers is Sky Conway, who was one of the writers and producers of Star Trek of Gods and Men.
Oh.
And it is kind of like this little underground hit that he didn't know it was a big hit in the libertarian community, because they actually even played it at Porkfest one time, I think, because one of the coolest things
about having Tim Russ play General Jack Gurdon of the Revolutionary Agorist Cadre in the movie Alongside Night is that, you know, nowadays Tim Russ looks a little bit like President Obama, and so, you know, we've already been trolled by some of the more amusing trolls saying, "How is President Obama leading the revolutionary movement?"
Ah, that's awesome.
And it reminds me of the line going back to Men in Black 3, "Mommy, the president is drinking my chocolate milk."
It's really cool that there's a couple more actors out there that are starting to get these ideals, that you can actually get them on board for projects like this. So how's the movie been received? How have you done so far with its release, and how can our listeners find it?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, right after we finished it, we decided to bring it around to some libertarian-oriented venues, and this is going back to spring and summer of 2013. We actually played the movie in the media room at Porkfest last year. This year, we're going to be actually going to the Rialto Theater, which is a couple of miles away from Rogers Campground, where Porkfest is, and we're going to a real movie theater, and it will be playing 7:30 p.m. on the first Tuesday of Porkfest. As I say, at the Real Rialto Movie Theater in Lancaster. And we're hoping to get a lot of people out from Porkfest to watch it there. We're also planning a screening for, again, the first night of Freedom Fest. We played the movie very successfully on opening night of Freedom Fest last year. Got a lot of people who liked it there. Again, we're setting up a movie theater screening just a couple of miles away from Planet Hollywood for the first night of Freedom Fest this year, and we'll hopefully try to attract some of those people. But our very first screening is a week from today on the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica at the Lowe's AMC 4 Theaters, a week from today, 7:30 p.m., and that's really the first time in a movie theater that anybody's going to get to see Alongside Night, week from tonight.
That's very, very
exciting. I didn't realize it hasn't been released wide yet. That's awesome. So it's just coming out.
Well, you see, we're using a revolutionary new distribution system called TUG, in which pretty much anybody who wants to can set up a screening of Alongside Night in a movie theater and have what we call an Alongside Movie Night. And so we've got four confirmed screenings set up and a whole bunch more on the horizon. And while that is going on, while over the course of the next few months we do our submissions, we just took on what's called a producer's representative to submit the movie to the major distributors, hoping to build up a big enough buzz in these initial screenings that we'll get wide distribution and then go on from there to Blu-ray, DVD, Netflix, Redbox, Walmart, and everywhere else on Earth. So we're building up as rapidly as we can. But right now, what everybody needs to know is that if you want to know where Alongside Night is playing, where there's a theater screening coming up near you, go to alongsidenightmovie.com, our official website, and click on Find Theaters.
So there you have it, right from the mouth of J. Neil himself. You're going to be able to just go online to that website and find out where the film is playing. Taryn, I know you're very excited to see this thing, are you not?
I've actually seen it in the last Porkfest. They screened it. But what I like about him is that he's basically a guerrilla filmmaker. So a lot of times when somebody wants to make a film, you have to get all kinds of permits and permission. Mm-hmm. And he was able to be pretty smart about how he did it and work around it. So there's a shot where he has a guy ziplining across Hoover Dam. And so they just shot Hoover Dam and then shot a zipline and composited them together. So it looked very real. And it's just really cool for indie people like myself to see how it can be done and get around some of the filming BS and laws.
That is kind of exciting. I mean, because there are so many laws and rules and regulations. And, as you mentioned to him, you're beginning that filmmaking yourself. It really seems to me like, Taryn, your background is kind of in that guerrilla sort of style, isn't it? Isn't that what your influences are?
Oh, completely. I'm a big Roger Gorman guy, and also Lloyd Kaufman, who makes the Tromaville movies.
Oh, sure.
The guys that made Toxic Avenger, and that guy's been putting out stuff for 30 years, horror movies, and they do it on no money at all, and they break all the rules. He shows you how to. I'm a big fan of that style of filming, and it's gotten much better since the cameras have gotten much better. They look professional now. And in this movie, he gets some pretty amazing shots. There's like shots from a drone. There's shots from aerial shots. And I mean, he made this movie for pretty cheap compared to what a big Hollywood film makes.
Just like everything, Taryn, it takes all of my thinking back to me because it always comes back to me. Let's travel back to 1992 when I made a film, the only film I've ever made. It was called The Reoccurring Eagle, and it was done for my religion class. Jesus was a biker. The soundtrack was comprised of Black Sabbath.
Is this real?
This is real, man. We had to go out and rent a VCR camera. Remember the huge video cameras of the past?
Yeah, I had many of those.
Yes, had to go out and rent one of those. My class and I shot this thing. Jesus kicked Satan's butt. And Jesus rode off into the sunset with the Doobie Brothers singing, "Jesus is just all right." After Satan had arrived in his black car, which was my buddy's hot rod he drove around in, playing, "My name is Lucifer, please take my hand." And I did all of the editing. I did every bit of the editing myself. I did every bit of the music splicing myself. And I had no idea how to make a movie. I just decided, well, if there are RCA plugs involved, it must be able to be done. And I made this film, got an A+.
I would love for you to put that up on YouTube and put it into our viewer spot there. Just drop it right on the Facebook page for our fans to enjoy your first movie.
Oh gosh, I wonder if I even have a copy of it anymore. Yeah, and it was called The Reoccurring Eagle only because my friend Dave from Texas, God only knows what happened to him. He happened to like catch a vulture flying in the air, and I was like, "Yeah, we'll say that's an eagle," and so we made that the start of the film.
You named your whole film on some B-roll footage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the reoccurring eagle, what does that really have to do with Christ? Although you can sit there and be, well, you know, it's like the phoenix and the rebirth, and the eagle is a majestic bird, much like Christ upon the cross. No, it was all just B-roll footage that we thought.
You just happened to get a bird at the right time.
And part of the film, like where we wanted to do like faraway shots, we'd have G.I. Joe figures on pieces of cardboard and slide them across my pool table. It was perfect. It was great.
That sounds like the same quality. That's good stuff there, right?
Oh, I need to see this film again. It's been years. I got to find it. Hey, we're going to put the wraps and the kibosh on this little episode of the Liberty Cats. We'll do that right after this. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday edition. Good to have you along here. We'll be right back. Don't you go anywhere. Well, you can, but come back. Don't stay away.
Buffy, darling. Put down your crumpets and listen to these clever chaps. They made me chuckle so hard my monocle fell off. It would be a capital idea if you tuned into the Liberty Cats every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 6 p.m. on Daily Ball Radio. They're our kind of people, darling. Now, excuse me, darling. I have to go roll around in all my money naked.
And I'm always naked when we're doing this little thing called the Liberty Cats every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. This is the Wednesday edition, April 9th. My name is Brian Hagan, along with
Taryn P. Lupo.
And I got to tell you, Taryn, this has just been a fantastic show, regardless of what the listeners might think. But I know they enjoyed it because J. Neil Schulman just brought kind of a neat dynamic and got into the ideas of filmmaking. Although I do have to tell you, I miss the fact that we didn't discuss hookers at all during this episode.
Yeah, and, you know, he had a whole movie that took place in a brothel.
I know.
And we didn't even get the chance to talk to him about that. That, you know, oh, what a torture that he has all these women running around that are prostitutes in the movie that he had to work on set with. I bet that was torture.
Oh, I know, because we played some of the trailer earlier on in this episode, and I was actually watching it while the listeners were hearing it. And, man, there are some real hotties in there. He just had to enjoy doing that sort of shooting.
You know, and that's the thing. As a writer, I wonder if you sit and you're like, because, you know, he puts himself in his own movies. So he's usually just like a B character. He's not the main guy. He's just, you know, like a side character, kind of right. Like what Stan Lee does, you know, where he makes a cameo.
Sure.
And so I'm sure he's sitting there as a writer being like, okay, strippers surround this character, strippers dance, kiss this character. Like, he just, I know I would abuse it. I would write it. So,
oh,
like a god.
You know, every movie I did, I don't care if the movie was about Jesus, I would definitely include a stripper scene and then have myself in there and, yeah, have them dancing around me. Yeah, some call it gratuitous. I call it necessary.
And this is what would, I would love to start another show on this to talk about Christian entertainment, because no offense, man,
it
I just
sucks.
Don't get Christian rock, and
no.
I don't get Christian movies. They just aren't the same quality, man.
No.
I hate it. I'm
no, they're not. No, they're not. Michael W. Smith makes Jesus puke. I've long believed that. Maybe next
Jesus,
time.
Jesus cries, and he wants to crucify himself when he watches this stuff.
He sure does. It's like, oh, this is just awful. Why are they giving it all to me? That's not what he meant by prayer, people. Singing bad, bad pop music. Hey, Allison Bricker's next. It's on Daily Paul Radio. We're your Liberty Cats, and we are out of here. Back to the old scratching posts.
You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.